This is the podcast of the German Historical Institute London, a research centre dedicated to supporting and connecting students and scholars from Britain and Germany. The podcast series presents current research in British, German and European history, as well as colonial and global history. For more information on the German Historical Institute London, future events, the GHIL Library, studentships and more podcast episodes, please visit our website at ghil.ac.uk.
Is globalization a threat to democracy? My name is Kim Koenig, and in this GHIL podcast interview, I am joined by Julia Angster, Professor of Modern History at the University of Mannheim, to discuss the research behind her GHIL lecture on globalization, democracy, and the nation-state in Germany after 1990. We explore the impact of globalization and neoliberalism on the nation-state and national identity, the current state of liberal democracy, and future directions for historiography beyond the national frame. Hello, Julia. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. You gave a lecture earlier this year at the GHIL entitled Post-Democracy, Globalization, Democracy and the Nation-State in Germany after 1990. And we are very happy to have you on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure. And I'm quite glad that you actually give me the chance to recap this and talk about the topic. That's a great idea. Thank you.
Yeah, speaking of recap, if you could just tell our listeners a little bit about your research, about the lecture, how did the idea for your research project come about and how did the project develop and what is it about?
Right, let me maybe just start with the talk itself before I open to the wider project. The lecture I gave in February was basically dealing with the idea that globalization was a threat to democracy. The notion, if I may just explain, the notion behind this idea is, or the logic, is that only the nation state can supposedly guarantee democratic self-government by a society. It needs the national framework. It needs the closeness of the group that is actually governing itself, like an idea of society as a homogeneous or at least bounded group of people governing themselves in a democratic way. And globalization is seen to undermine the nation state by making it lose sovereignty, making it porous, basically, in an economic way as well as a political. Most dangerous seems the loss of economic autonomy, but also what you find mentioned in the sources, and I'll mention the sources in a moment, what you find is the erosion of national identity. And in all these ways, people between the 1990s, late 90s, or mid-90s, to the late 2010s, after the end of the Cold War, and up until the Trump years, basically, like the first Trump years, well, let's not go into this. They would see globalization as something that undermines democracy. And you find a lot of social scientists, historians, people from law, politicians less, but like historians and social scientists, especially political scientists, complaining or fearing, worrying that globalization would be the end of liberal democracy, especially.
Speaking about sources, who are the people that you're looking at? You just mentioned social scientists, political scientists, historians. What kind of sources do you work with? Is this more a discourse analysis about political and kind of historical discourse?
Yeah. The thing is, maybe if I start with how I found it, I was working on and reading up on the state after 1990s, statehood in the West and in Germany especially. And I found this notion that globalization was undermining statehood in an amazing amount of texts by especially social scientists, that is political scientists, some sociologists, also like political philosophers and historians. To quote some examples, we do have, of course, Jürgen Habermas, a liberal political philosopher, famous author and a mainstay of writing on political thought in Western Germany. He wrote in the late 90s, in 1998, an article on how denationalization undermines democracy. Another example would be the British political scientist Colin Crouch in his book Post-Democracy, where I borrowed the title from, who says that politics these days is taken away from the nation state by liberal economic globalization, by neoliberalism and economic and fiscal globalization. The state is being reduced in its capacity to actually govern within. So what I've got is mostly German writers, authors, and Colin Crouch is an exception, but he is widely read in Germany. This is a West German, basically, national history, really, historicizing the notions of the old Federal Republic at the very point in time where the fabric seems to disintegrate, where this old world of political thought is disintegrating. My sources are not archive material, but rather the publications of these people. All these texts that try to reach even a wider audience, not only within a scientific community or the academic community. So yeah, it is a history of discourse. It's a history of perception of how democracy, society, and the state work. And also it's the history of a lament, basically, a narrative of loss, of crisis. The more I read, the more I was astonished because this seemed so overdone. Because as far as I can tell, we do have a crisis in liberal democracy, but it's not being caused by a process of globalization, but rather coming from within Western societies who refuse parliamentarism or sneer at those politicians and try to opt out of liberal parliamentary democracy. But for other reasons, I believe, we do have problems. I can go into that later. Hmm. But this wholesale narrative of crisis, where globalization is the culprit in very many ways, on an international level, on an economic level, on a cultural migratory level, seemed to me overdone. And my explanation that I offered in my paper that I gave was that it's basically a fight for the monopoly to define what politics and statehood and society actually are meant to be. And it's those people, it's at least the political group or those people in academia who used to define notions of statehood and political thought from the late 70s well into the 1990s. So basically, it can be read as a, how do you say that? Kampf um Deutungshoheit. I don't know how to say that in English. I'm sorry for that.
Yeah, kind of the authority of interpretation, probably.
Yeah, that's it. That's a struggle for continued authority of interpretation of the basics of a liberal democracy. It's a sea change in a way. It's a way of defending an old world pre-1990 against the onslaught of a new culture, a new kind of society, a new way of dealing with media, of thinking about politics. It's basically a history of ideas and of political thought.
Yeah, I think that's very interesting. I think you called it old patterns of interpretation stacked against new ways of life and of politics. And I was wondering, you mentioned that we see this in the late 90s and probably until the present day. And I was wondering whether you see a shift in these narratives. Do we have a change in the way we talk about these so-called crises of democracy? Are there new generations of thinkers? Or do you see kind of a continuity in the arguments that are being made?
Well, in a way, the notions and the discourse I was talking about has sort of, in my view, sort of faded again. It only carries into the second half of the 2010s, because then you get that debate about the crisis of liberal democracy after 2016, with the AfD rising in Germany, the Alternative for Germany, with the Yellow Vest protests in France, with lots of instances of crisis. But then you do get the attack on Ukraine by Putin, you get the war, and suddenly the nation state, borders, warfare play a very prominent role again in newspaper reports, in the perception of international relations, and has sort of drowned out for some time the talking about globalization and about interdependence on a global way. And then you get the crisis, the perceived crisis of migration, with migrants being perceived as a threat within the country. So the notion of globalization, first of all, as a progressive thing, as a thing to be welcomed, has changed and turned it into, and that happens in the late 90s to 2010s, into a crisis narrative. But then it's the national level back in, smack in the middle of perceptions and of discussion, of discourse. So my topic is basically borders, temporal borders. And I wouldn't say it's active today. It's something that is ongoing, but I believe it's good source material and offers insight into what happened in West Germany, especially more than in all of Germany, but in the Old West, after unification, this worrying about a new world, this insecurity about rules, about where to go.
Would you say that there's been kind of a shift or a transfer from political and kind of social scientific thought to public thought? I feel like those kind of concerns are very much things we see in more so in public discourse at the moment. And I was just thinking that if those kind of scientific discourses are old patterns of interpretation, I was wondering how you think about young people having these concerns now, especially the rise of right-wing populism, young people turning towards the right.
I'm not an expert in this field, actually, but from my vantage point, it looks like you refer to the young people in Germany, the big slice of young people preferring right-wing extremism to liberal democracy. Like, it's not a big slice, but it's worrying at the same time. So maybe it's a kind of search for belonging, for simple answers. You see the same in the MAGA world in the United States. I was tempted to use the word homesickness to a simple world, to a former world, to a perceived world gone by, which never really was that easy, nor that pleasant. But this need to define a group that I then belong to, and it's clear-cut, and it's non-ambivalent, like this fear of ambivalence, of unclear borders, be they territorial or identity-wise defined, this hunger for my group that looks like me, talks like me, eats like me, and then we build a state around this and kick out everybody else, is not new at all. It's awfully familiar since the late 19th century. It's a red thread to political history, especially in Germany, of course. But I would not try to belittle it, but in a way it's an expression of a feeling of insecurity, which might then turn into a real problem once we get the numbers together for a sea change, a shift in German politics, which I hope is a long way away. But it's also indicative for like insecurity and for perceived problems.
Lastly, I wanted to ask you, moving on from here, for the study of history, for historical research, and especially historiography, I think you've spoken about kind of the denationalization of historiography, of history writing. Where do you see the discipline going from here?
That's a very important point and something that really interests me very much. And I've written articles on this already, trying to grapple with it. Maybe if I may start with a biographical approach. I wrote my dissertation on the westernization of West Germany, and that was in the 90s. And that felt to me like a huge step. Hooray, I can work in a transnational fashion, do a transnational history, look at the communication, the interrelation between different societies in the realm of political thought. And that was my way of transcending national history. And from that time, I remember that national history, national historiography seemed so old-fashioned and was under suspicion, was suspicious because it sounded so nationalistic and so old-fashioned and was so all-pervasive. And trying to open up those doors, open the national borders for history writing felt great. And then I dabbled with global history and noticed later on that there seemed to be an either-or. The idea that national history is old-fashioned and global history, which took over from transnational history, seemed to be progressive. Like the goodies, those who really try to overcome old-fashioned national political historiography. And in the end, especially in the 2010s, I found that this dichotomy is, maybe I exaggerated, it appeared to me as a dichotomy. And that didn't make sense really, because I thought the nation state is not the antagonist of globalization, but if, depending on who you read, an important motor of an actor within globalization, those multifaceted processes that should rather actually be called globalizations. But also the nation state itself seemed to me an object that was so important to 19th and 20th century, even to decolonization, not only European history, that it's worthwhile looking at it still and not just, or let me put it another way, people who did global history tended to just drop national topics and leave them aside instead of historicizing them. And so I thought it would be a good idea to actually historicize the nation state from a global history perspective and go at it again and look at these topics. And so I find the nation state is worthy of explanation. It's a phenomenon that needs writing about, but not, and that's my crucial point, from within a national perspective or with a national methodology. So that's what I tried, like open that nut and analyze it from without.
That's very interesting. And just looking towards the future, taking away from your research, can you give us perhaps a little outlook on how you yourself and other historians take points from your research and apply it to our current climate and possible futures of the discipline?
What I'm trying to do, what I'm dabbling at, is basically a global history of the nation state. When global does not mean everywhere, but in the sense that I'm trying to apply the questions and perspectives of global history to the topic of the nation state and national society and even the notion of society itself, which I find very interesting and strange and worthy of analysis. And so, but for the future, well, thinking of, for an example, the idea that society, take the German one, is an obvious term, is a notion that everybody knows what's meant by it, is fallacious. What I find very interesting is the notion of a post-migratory society, where a society is at a point where it's no longer distinguishing in who is from here and who is from elsewhere, but rather deals with the effect of people living third generation from different cultures and dealing with each other and melting into a group with still clear-cut different upbringings, different notions of world, of religion, of politics, but at the same time living together. And here you see, that's what I was talking about in my paper, that the idea of what is conflict within a society, what are these lines of conflict that need dealing with by a political process, Willensbildung, like coming with an answer how to govern the country, making laws, how to answer actual problems, specific problems of the time. Now, if you look at Ernst Fraenkel and the 1960s and 70s notions of what's political conflict and how to resolve it in a pluralist society, in a pluralist liberal order, then you find these conflicts are all economic, labor and capital, and different strata of society having conflicts about economic problems. And this has changed in a profound way. We have conflicts about cultural questions, cultural problems, role of women, what have you, schools. And so there need to be different means of and different ways of dealing with conflict and of understanding conflict and its rules to run a liberal democracy today. And I believe that to see that, you need to see how it came about. And to rethink, that's more important, to rethink the basic and crucial notions we as historians or social scientists use to describe the world. Because if you use notions that stem from the 1960s and don't apply to the groups and problems and world we live in today, you will not come up with an analysis that helps anybody. So that's what I mean. You need to identify a source when you see it and not mistake it for an analytical concept. So by historicizing actual concepts and notions that are in use today, I try to scream, hey, change of plan, change of times.
I think that's a really great point to round off our conversation and incredibly important. It was fascinating to hear more about your research, and I'm really looking forward to the output from that. And I hope our listeners will enjoy this conversation as much as we did. And of course, also listen to your lecture that's also available on our podcast. Thank you so much, and we hope to see you soon.
Thanks very much from my side. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the German Historical Institute London podcast. follow us on social media and check our website to keep up to date with new episodes.